And I'm the sole dental representative giving this course. Alrighty, so let's get to know you guys. How many pre-med? Not so many. How many pre-dent? Wow, like half? That's pretty impressive. Okay. How many neither? What are you up to?
PA.
Very good. Okay. I was asking. I got a 10th grader. You guys would recommend sending him here? Looking at the Landers, he's high happy.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay.
Not everybody answered.
Okay. So a resounding maybe. I'm a dentist. I practice in Cedarhurst, Long Island, as well as down this block, 186th Union Turnpike. Any of the dental guys want to check me out? David Wiseman. Spell it as it sounds, W-I-S-C-M-A-N. Anybody wants to observe? I've done it for years where guys come, they assist or observe. Anybody interested in that? We do dental implants, do implants, root canals, crown and bridge, kids, whatever, you know. Patient comes in and needs something, I try to deliver it there. That's what I like doing. So we have a lot of topics to discuss. We'll see how far we get. I usually have more prepared than I'm going to cover in this time. And what I have to do is so we'll stop 5 minutes early, you guys get down tomorrow. And 10 minutes before that, I figure I'll just review what I think is shaykh probably to take home, potentially, you know, for the final. We'll do it that way. Okay, so I was tasked with discussing three topics. It's going to be autopsies, anatomy lab, and dental issues in halacha. So we're going to kind of cover the first two relatively quickly, and then we'll go through the dental issues. Some of them are shaykh to all of us. Your very own Rabbi Arya Leibowitz wrote in one of the journal, Contemporary Halacha, he wrote a pretty long essay on brushing teeth. So hopefully we'll just cover some of the practical aspects of that, which I would think would have shaykhish to anybody here with teeth. So, alrighty, what would be the issue? Anybody think pro autopsy, anti autopsy? Autopsies, right? Basically, somebody dies, they want to find out what the reason is for their death. That would be an indication for an autopsy. So, what would be the issue? Why do we not? Okay, so nivel amase or covet amase. So, many of you probably already have, the textbook for the course is probably Nishmat Avram. If you have it, you don't have it, but that's basically where many of us have gotten our sources, because he combines he writes basically based on the Shulchan Aruch, right? If it is a siman that's shaykh to some medical law, medical halacha, he puts it together. Just as an aside, I really think, I'm sure you guys have been getting a lot out of this class, not only from the content, but the people who are giving the class. I know who some of the other lecturers, and you know, if you want to see, you know, where you would want to be in 10, 20, 50, you know, 30 years, you can aspire, right, to be Koveitim, you know, where you can be Koveitim, make Kiddush Hashem wherever you are, but also be in the tops in your field. That's kind of what you've been exposed to, maybe not me, but kind of been exposed to in this class. So, certainly the take home, just from coming from guys who are in the field and practicing, is that in college, it's one thing, but get out there in medical school, a dental school, wearing a kippah, not shaving during Sfira, certainly you represent who you represent, and there's a concept of, like we learned in the Lexi Parsha, Kedoshim Tiyu is certainly a concept of, it's very easy for us to get on the wrong side of a Chilul Hashem, God forbid, and therefore always keep in mind doing the right thing in school, in residency. I remember in my residency, I went to Long Island College Hospital, Baruch Dynamis. It's no longer, the hospital's no longer around. And I'm not a morning person, but we had to be there 8 o'clock, which meant, you know, getting up, davening, taking the train from the city and to Brooklyn. And you know, if you're not a morning person, you're not getting up and not a coffee drinker, you're not going to be the friendliest guy. And the staff will kind of think what's up with this guy? And he's got an attitude. So it has nothing to do with them, and yet here it is, you kind of reflection. So certainly with patience, with everybody, you got to be erlich, yashar, and try to do the best that you can. Okay, getting back to this. Autopsy, so we said there's Nishmat Avram. He brings a couple of aspects. So he said, cover the mace. Nivela Meis is one. And what we're talking about with autopsies is autopsies are given for a number of different reasons. So the first one is doing an autopsy in order to learn medicine. Does that happen? It happens in medical school. It happens in dental school. Maybe at some point they're going to get such 3D models that one can learn virtually, right? Put on some glasses with an Android phone, and then you can kind of like just go through and learn, potentially. But I believe that I went through it, and they continue to offer anatomy with cadavers in school as a part of the school setting. So what's the issues there? Kavod HaMeis is certainly a big one. And he says it's actually awesome in the Torah. The other one is Hana'ah. One is not allowed to benefit from the mace. In fact, taking things off of the mace potentially could be an issue of benefiting from the mace. And Rosh Shlomo Zalman says that when it comes to benefiting the mate, it could be even watching an autopsy, maybe benefiting from the mace. You're learning from that. What about burying? Lo Sullen, right? Yeah.
Sorry, is the Hana, at least the first reason, is this only for a Jewish body or for any Sullen?
Right, so anybody else want to venture an answer on that? Would this be for anybody or for a Jewish body? Okay, so he concludes that the difference is, and that's why we have the head there, certainly it is because Rubam de Rubam, we could also get talk about Kohen, trying to learn. Any Kohanim here? No Kohanim? Okay, good. We'll go through that halacha relatively quickly. Rav Moshe, parenthetically, says yes. There's a mitzvah in the Torah, v'rapo yirape. But Rav Moshe says, it doesn't mean you, Mr. Kohen, need to be the one that's it's Mekayim that. So it's not so pashut having Rav Tendler, right? Rav Moshe Tendler talks about the concept of a Kohen. And typically, I had a Kohen in my dental school class. He didn't complete the school, but he went through anatomy. And he carried a clipboard close to his chest the entire course. By holding the clipboard, right, he protected from touching the mace. So we'll just jump to that for a minute and come back. So a Kohen is not allowed to be in a room where there's a mace, but what kind of mace and what type of situation? When it comes to that, there's two types of tumah. There's tumas ohel and tumas maga. Certainly, if you're going to get involved in an autopsy, what are you going to end up being involved with? Tumas maga. Tumas maga applies to all Jewish, non-Jewish, applies to all bodies. So for a Kohen to be metame, mamish bimaga, and touching would be prohibited. It's also, you can't learn that way. To be in a room, what we call tumas ohel, so there is a distinction. For a yid, there's tumas ohel. For a guy, there isn't. So the way, in fact, the way a Kohen is not recommended because there's certainly other issues that come in. A lot of other issues that come with a Kohen, working in a hospital setting where there could be a morgue and other things is certainly something to, beyond what I want to cover for today because that's certainly bigger issues for a Kohen, just learning. But let's say for a dentistry, right, typically you're not going to be dealing with the dead people. And the question is a tooth an aver? Right, yes.
When they're doing, putting the bone, they're regrowing the bone.
Fair enough. Okay, so bone, all right, the potential pre-dent guys may know it, the potential pre-dent guys may not, but there's a concept of bone graft, okay, a patient needs an implant, so you need to do a bone graft. What it is there's a defect in the bone and you want to fill out the bone. So we have two sources for bone. We have bovine, and is exactly what it sounds like, this cow bone, and then there's cadaver bone. All bone that we use is demineralized and inorganic. What I mean is they remove any organic structure from it. Because think about it, you could have a patient who's like freaking out, what I mean? You're going to give me from a guy who has AIDS? Right? So all the organic material is removed. So all it is a white powdery substance that is the inorganic structure of bone. I can't imagine there's a concept of tumor with that. Anyway, I don't see that as being an issue. For any number of reasons, it's just only this is a matrix. It's a fair question. I just didn't even think that would be an issue there because it's lost any semblance of, you know, most of what makes a bone organically. I'm sorry?
My dad's also done this, so he had a shot if he put that into a coin.
And again, answer?
He said it was
yeah, I can't see that that's a shaykh in terms of real tumah. You know, I don't even know if there's tumah now that's changed so much. I mean, what kind of tumah would be there? In any event, so for a Kohen, if he can, so we said the tumas ohel is not there for a goy. So when you walk into an, you know, into an anatomy lab, you could have 20, 30, 40 bodies. So we have the assumption that psak halacha is that ruvim are not Jewish. So since ruvim are not Jewish, what we have is the somech on that, at least for tumas ohel. So that's why a Kohen could potentially be in a room to observe, as long as he can find a way to observe without being hands-on. Yes?
Is there a difference between in America and in Israel, where we assume most of the bodies are non-Jewish versus
The only thing is, would somebody donate, is the likelihood of people donating their bodies to science?
There are a lot of non-from Jews
right.
in Israel.
In Israel, you have to find, you know, feet, boots on the ground. Find out what the statistics are. Can you resumech on that rove? Mm-hmm. May still be a rove in Eretz Yisrael, okay? It may still be a rove in terms of donating to science. They may still have a rove. Well, here in America, which is where we are, unless you guys are applying to Sackler or one of the other schools in Eretz Yisrael, we'll talk about that. So, for Kohen, it's certainly less than ideal because of other situations, but how can he get around the anatomy problem? He can get in with a group who's friendly enough that they'll do all the dissections and he can just observe, and then he gets an netters, anatomy book, and he can learn online and do a lot of things that way. Okay, so we reviewed autopsies will be the issue. Now, the real answer is all the discussion we're having is with a Jewish body. Okay? When it comes to a non-Jewish body, non-Jewish corpse. If the family of a non-Jew either demand or permit an autopsy to be performed for medical reasons on the corpse of that non-Jew, the Igros Moshe, based on the opinions of many, Rishon, Machronim, and Rav Arbach, both rule that this is allowed. So we got it down to the conclusion when it comes to a Gentile body, is if that were one autopsy, it would be permitted. So to review, so we talked about Kovod HaMeis. We talk of benefiting from the mace. We talked about delaying burial, a little sullen, right? We should the mace should be put into the body, into the ground, as soon as possible. Also, the fifth one he brings is it's difficult for the body, departed soul, to see the desecration of the body. Okay, certainly, you know, those who know how long it takes for the neshama. When it leaves the body, it remains in location, you know, if it's a shiva and shloshim yom, however it takes for the neshama to move on, there's a concept that there's a pain to the neshama to see the body desecrated. So those would all be issues concerning autopsies to learn medicine. There wouldn't be a permission, it would be right from that standpoint. There's other reasons why someone would get an autopsy. Another one would be autopsies to save a life. I looked at the remotion, I'm not going to cover it inside. Remotion talks about, right, imminent danger versus in that location, in another location. Why is it, right, let's say somebody dies from a, and they want to find out what the machla is, what caused the death. So if you have somebody else that is sick, possibly with the same type of problem, so that would be one place where one would allow an autopsy to occur. If a seriously ill patient is present in the same department or hospital where someone else with the same symptoms has just died, and they could maybe find out what this guy has, one the mace had, and therefore relate those findings to somebody, and therefore pikuach nefesh, so that would be permitted. Chazon Ish quoted in Nodei Biyuda, and the Chassam Sofer writes, an autopsy may be performed to save the life of a seriously ill patient who is present in the same hospital. Although Rav Moshe added that if it's nearby, I mean now, right, I think, is it dissemination of information, if you know of somebody present, could be, you know, in a different hospital, but with some, with that you could use the information you're getting from this and relate it, that would be permitted. Are you allowed to get?
You were talking about glaze autopsy.
Right, so donating or selling your body would be another reason why autopsies would be done. Right, it seems that if the, that would be, the heta would be if the family of the deceased permit it, then the poskim seem to say that that would be allowed, yes?
You said that's the only time a Jew can, I mean, we could do an autopsy on a Jew?
That would be, the main one is to save the life. Ramosha goes into, and Rav Avram, Dr. Avram go into a couple things, just beyond this couple, I don't want to get too deep bogged down. But what about if a nafel, right? Somebody miscarries. And this is something that a competent, you know, posek should decide. If a woman carries and miscarries or the child dies, then she needs to know if other children that she has may have a similar, seem to have a similar issue that may fall under the category of permitted autopsies. Right. Right, I'm saying the baby dies. And now the mother wants to know if maybe could glean some information going forward in terms of parenting other children.
Wouldn't that be the
children?
There's only suffering. That, I mean, there it's like, I mean, you don't even know if the other kids are going to get sick here and other kids are going to rush
crossing. Right, I mean, these are the things I'm saying. We're more like, more broad, kind of discussing potential issues that would bring up where a competent rub should be asked, you know, from permissibility. Oh, here it is. Autopsy of an aborted fetus. It's also been performed for the purpose of studying medicine. Rav Nuna told me that the autopsy is been only if the woman had miscarried more than 40 days after conception. But if it was less than this, autopsy of the fetus would be permitted. That we can understand. Okay, before 40 days, it's not completely formed. So it's not really the same concepts of kovdames, nivolames, all those would have come into place 40 days before. He also told me that if a woman had recurrent miscarriages and there's a possibility an autopsy could prevent her from aborting in a future pregnancy, then it would be permitted.
Even after 40 days?
Even after 40 days, because now we're... Rav Auerbach told me that this would also apply to a baby who died less than 30 days after birth. Such a baby is a possible nafil, and besides by performing, also that one may prevent a likelihood of danger to the mother from giving birth in the future to such children, nephilim. So he brings from another different sheet of that. Rav Moshe said, Rav brings the idea of a needle biopsy. Anybody know what a needle biopsy is? Right, where A, there's no issue of chabura, you're not damaging the body, and it's really minimally invasive, so it's not an issue of nivlamase. But if you could take some tissue, right, a needle biopsy, take some tissue and study that histologically or do some tests on some blood or some tissue from the one who died. So that would be permitted according to our motion. That would be a needle biopsy, another place where it's a minimal type of, it's not a true autopsy, but it's still studying, it's getting some information from the body. Autopsy to save the limb of a non-seriously ill patient. What about in that situation? So we go to Kadesh that talks about like a corneal transplant. So you guys already dealt with organ donation, so I'm gonna move beyond that and talk about some of the other ideas. So those are some basic ideas when it comes to autopsies. We covered about a Kohen. We also covered what the reasons why for Jewish mace an autopsy would not be allowed, and a couple of small ideas about when it would be.
What was the thing on the non-serious patient?
I'm sorry?
What did you say about the non-serious patient?
Let's say you're trying to save autopsy the limb of a non-seriously ill patient, meaning what he thought about doing is, would be allowed to do a corneal transplant from a corpse. So you have somebody who has a problem with their eyes, and would need a donor organ, and the cornea would be coming from a cadaver, from a corpse. So the psak would be, this would be forbidden in a situation where there's no danger to life. And I believe it at the, he says, Rav Shlomo Zarbach left it with the tzarchian. What about, the other one would be skin graft, right? Somebody went through serious burns, potentially, right? You could have donor skin. And certainly if there was a danger to life, everybody would agree that that would be permitted. Bone transplant from a bone bank if there's no danger to the patient's life, as in a hip replacement. Although at first sight, both these transplants should be permissible. They told me that this would not be applicable here. The recipient would be continuously obligated to bury the part of the deceased that was transplanted into him. Again, much of this is going to be coming from a Jewish mace, where we where these halachas become more of the, become the issue. So, Simukuf Nun Aleph in a Yeridea, Rav Moshe deals with the prohibition of Nituach Mesim, autopsies, to learn medicine. So, Lunachon Kla, Ki Isser Nivola Mes, Hu Akol Ha'olam Kula, Hu Akur Hu Akolam Kula, Verak Shiesh Krovim, Mutal Al Krovim Tchila. So therefore, we have that everybody has the obligation to prevent, provide honor to the mace. Yes.
Can we discuss the why what we're going to do in general, why non-Jewish body, why you can't do certain things to bodies in general? But what was the exact reason why the Jewish body is different just because it's Jewish? I mean, all the issues are bringing them now in terms of like the Aver and like that.
The main issues are the covered mace. You would think it's a tzelem akim, right? The Adam. So every Adam is tzelem akim. There's more kedusha, right? I mean, I don't think there's a prohibition against a guy from cremating himself, right? So the Torah gives commandments about bearing right away, right? So those who kabbal satorah means those who accept the Torah would be obligated in those. It's a mitzvah in the Torah, so therefore it's a commandment. So it's shayach for yidden.
So based on that, you could use, like, hip or no?
Right, so that would be where the permissibility would come in on a, for a, from a guy, correct.
When you talked about the Nephel and some of those other cases where mm-hmm. you said that the needle biopsy, where we said it's permitted, would that be obligatory if that could potentially save a life? Right? Would you flip and say that you have to do this autopsy?
I think that would be under the medical decision would be this is something that's necessary.
Mm-hmm.
So that would sway the decision mm-hmm. relatively heavily. Okay, so I want to move on to some other topics. Trying to see if there's any aspects of Rav Moshe that make sense to cover. Okay. Moving along. We're going to talk about some dental issues in Halacha, and there's quite a few. You guys are out there. What do you think would be a dental issue in Halacha?
Emergencies on Shabbos.
Okay. What else?
Yeah.
What else? Emergency on Shabbos, yeah. That's pretty obvious, whether it's pikuach nefesh or not. It's just, I'm just a dentist, right? How can a dental problem be a pikuach nefesh? We'll talk about that, yes.
Working on your parents.
Okay, good. Working on your parents. What else? So Rav Moshe has a tshuva on that. I didn't include in this. About plastic surgery. That's a general topic on plastic surgery. It's a fair enough question. Is cosmetic, right? Dental implant, all this cosmetic. Is it, I like it. Maybe we'll cover that in a little bit. That's a good one. Yes. Very good. What else? I'm not covering it, but I like it. What was the second half? Yichud
and?
Nida issues. Good. Chazitza, yeah?
Going to the dentist on a fast day.
Good.
Rinsing out.
Exactly.
Once we talk about surgery, we talk about general anesthesia.
So, I mean, that's more broad, but then specific to dentistry. General anesthesia, maybe. All right, so you guys covered what? Okay, so we covered some really important ones. We have working on your parents. Good. We're going to cover that. We have Shabbos. We have Chatzitza. What one did you brought up?
Fast day.
Okay. What about Chol HaMoed? Going to the dentist with Chol HaMoed, right? So we know the Ramban in Moed Katan deals with discussion of what is permitted on Chol HaMoed, right? There's a whole machlokas Rishonim. I didn't prepare for this, but it's something interesting. Machlokas Rishonim, what a malacha is permitted on Chol HaMoed. So maybe going to the dentist where there's malacha going to be, would that be an issue going to Chol HaMoed? So let's cover a lot of these, try to cover the ones that you brought up are the ones that I want to cover, okay? So, Shabbos laws. That's probably one we're going to spend a little bit more time on. So, what did you hear so far from any other lecturers about Shabbos?
Don't break Shabbos.
Don't break Shabbos. That's from very good, okay.
Start.
But now we're dealing with a situation where you may or may not need to break Shabbos, yeah. Okay, so let's go through. What are the... But before we get to that, when it comes to Hilchos Shabbos, we have two possible understandings of the permissibility of Bimachal Shabbos. Hutra or Dechuya, right? What would be the Nafka Mina, whether it's Hutra or Dechuya? Just to review. If it's Hutra, right, I feel like you're in like a force field, right? Like, to the left of me, Shabbos, to the right of me, Shabbos, in front of me, get in the car and go. Right? It's not Shabbos. Dechuya is, it's Shabbos even for me, but I have a rationale to be Docha Shabbos. Nafgaminas would be potentially doing with a Shinoi, which you really don't want your dentist doing. Right? You don't want your dentist working with their left hand if they're righty. You know, I mean, these are the types of things that may not be practical when it comes to those issues. So theoretically, another one about Hutra and Dechuya is... So this is from the Journal of Halacha, from 1988. It's Rabbi Moshe David Tendler and Dr. Fred Rosner, who precedes Abraham in terms of medical halacha. So if it's there's three nafkaminas, it would be between Hutra and Dechuya. One is, once you're already be Michal Shabbos, do you do everything is the same as you would do it on weekday? Or do you kind of like skip a few steps to avoid malacha? If it's Hutra, then, like I said, it's Shabbos to the left, Shabbos to the right of me, right? But right where I am, I would perform everything the same way as if it was a weekday. Second one is, do you need to call at least for the patient, a non-Jewish doctor, or should you call a Jewish doctor? If it's Hutra, then it shouldn't matter. If it's Dechuya, maybe preferable to do a Milakum, non-Jewish doctor. And the third one we brought up is the concept of a Shinoi. So Shinoi is interesting because the Avnei Nezer writes that what is considered a Shinoi? Shinoi is that the results are different than anticipated. So if you want a filling done, or you want an IND, an incision and drainage, right? Or you need some medical procedure, so you're accomplishing whether you would do it with your left hand or right. Like if you've used your elbow to turn on a light, is that enough of a Shinoi to not Michal Shabbos? No. So that's an interesting one.
Well,
that's what I'm saying. That's not the only definition. The Eletal says if you accomplish the same thing in the end, then Shinoi was not, you didn't fulfill it, Shinoi. Right? It's results oriented. Okay. So now, Pikuach Nefesh, somebody brought up that there's four different levels. A few different levels we brought up. So one is one, Chol Asher Yesh Bo Sakana. Okay, what else will we have? Ein Bo Sakana, but that would be somebody who's Mechush Balma, right? Then there's Mechush Balma. A Chol Asher Ein Bo Sakana would be allowed to take medication. Talked about, right? He would like one, someone who would like one of Mishka Alamita. He wants to lie down, he's that sick. Then there's Mechush Balma. And then there's another one, it's Chol Asher Ein Bo Sakana Im Tzar Gadol. So that would be very much a chol she'im bo sakana im sargadol would be, that's my Dalai Lamas. Right? I mean, most people who come to me with toothaches, I had one today, I did a couple of root canals, but if they come to me, they're aim bo sakana. I mean, they're not going to die from this, but it will keel them over. Right? I mean, I can have this big 6'5", 300-pound guy, and he could be a bouncer and not be afraid to take on anybody. I've had it, like I had a MMA guy, he works for a sanitation. Like, you would not want to meet him in a dark alley. But a dental pain will put him into like a fetal position. I'm saying, right? Dental pain is certainly tzar gadol. So really the issue is, where do we call it a... Is there a difference between pikuach nefesh, where it's a cholesh yesh bo sakana, and cholesh yesh bo sakana in tzar gadol? So if it's a cholesh yesh bo sakana, so where would it be in dentistry where you would have a cholesh yesh bo sakana? It's not too common. The place would be where they have a huge abscess. Now, where can somebody die in dentistry? It doesn't happen too often. Thank God. But there are certain infections around the face that can find tracks up to the brain. Is it rare? Super. But is it possible? Yes. And when it comes to pikuach nefesh, which side do we usually err? To be machmir or to be meikel? We're going to be meikel, right? We're going to err on the side of caution when it's pikuach nefesh issue. So would it be incision and drainage? Would be one, a huge abscess, a facial abscess that can get caught in certain spaces and could run up there. But a meikel, so what could one do? So what Rabbi Tendler talks about is trying to do things. He says it's not practical to like mix cement or cut wires or something with your left hand, because he's still going to get the same results. He said to do things, we know that Shnaim Sa'asu, right? If you have two people that do a malacha together, where it's a malacha that could be accomplished with one, so there's no Isser min Torah. So he says perhaps there's a way to do that, meaning bring in a guide into some type of Amir Lakum. When it comes to practically, let's get down to practically. When it comes to practical dental halacha, you're going to have dentists who approach it in a number of different ways. I decided after a few years in practice, where I carried a pager, that I was going to designate that on Shabbos, there would be other phone numbers that one could reach, that people who either will go in, choose to go in, or Gentiles, Goyim, who will cover, and they cover the office, and therefore if it's an emergency on Shabbos, that they haven't reached me, but they get a phone number and they go, so they're endodontists, or root canal specialists, or oral surgeons that will cover my Shabbos. So that's the way I chose to handle Shabbos emergencies. If somebody reached out to me, and it was something significant, different, then all bets are off. Right, if it's a real, determined that it's a huge abscess and they need to deal with it, then we take care of it. So that's the story with that. So there's a concept of chesron eiver. The potential loss of limb, even if it's not pikuach nefesh, would be allowed to do the araisa melacha. But is losing an avulsed tooth, a tooth that falls out, is that considered in it? Right, is that considered an eiver, enough of an eiver? Right, put an implant in, right? You get a couple, you know, you make the money on the implant. No, so he says that, like, sorry, can't help you. It's Shabbos. Keep it in milk. No, but, so in that situation, I'm sorry? Keep it in milk. Yeah, that's the place the people put it. It's supposed to, if a tooth falls out, put it in milk so you can get to the dentist to reimplant it. So, the din would be that for an avulsed tooth, you could do rabbinic melacha, not biblical. So running a drill, let's say running a drill that's already going potentially could be derabanan, but it's not so. It's much difficult to determine what would be biblical melacha in what you're doing, what would be rabbinic. So dental abscesses are the ones that would be permitted because of potential. Yes.
So basic dental things are only
derabanan. You know, no. Basic dental issues. Let's say somebody's a cholesh she'ein bo sakana im tzar gadol and needs some type of a dental treatment, you could potentially do dirabanans.
What's like a
Yeah, so it's, I mean, physically picking up a tooth and placing it back into the socket would not be, you know what I mean? It could be issues of chabura, but chabura with is a benefit leads to, is probably okay. And it, in fact, you don't want bleeding. You want the opposite of bleeding. You try to avoid bleeding. So it could be schita. Like, you kind of like, so stitching would be kosher, potentially. So then you're dealing with, right, but if you're dealing with stitches, you might also already be in something that's beyond Cholashim, Sakonim, Sagadol, maybe, you know, step up from there. You know? Speaking of Shabbos, what about, yes?
I was just wondering a general question. How often, as a dentist, are you faced with a patient who, like, who needs you and he's asking you to call Shabbos or, you know, like,
right now, never.
Never.
Right. For a number of reasons. Most dental emergencies, they can make it till Sunday. I turn on my phone, Motzei Shabbos, and we get back to them. And if it's really that bad, they have numbers that they can reach and go to other doctors. I did ask an endodontist who's a Shomer Shabbos guy. He says, I go in. Endodontist deals mostly with, you know, bigger dental toothaches, and he says he covers that, and that's what he does. And that's his rough. He handles his dental emergencies, he handles dental emergencies. Giving anesthetic might be could potentially be giving anesthetic to do the treatment could potentially be rabbinic, or it could be derisive if you're actually making a chabura. Typically it's not a psikresha, it may not be a psikresha, so it might be avoided. You guys know that what can a doctor do if he goes in for emergency? He's allowed to return home. Right? Rav Moshe deals with, goes back to the even the Gemara and Pesach and then Shulchan Aruch. Why is he allowed to return home? Okay, good enough. So what about a dentist? Right, we're always second class. So no, what about a dentist? Are we allowed to return home? Are we stuck there? So the dentist, you're just a dentist. No, the dentist should leave the lights on in the office. Okay, he could turn the drill off. It's going to lead to, could cause damage or whatever in the office. And they would have the same dinim of returning from hospital, returning back as an MD. Fine. Let's talk about what about Shomer Shabbos residencies? Is that mandatory? For dental or for medicine? Well, I had in my residency, it wasn't a Shomer Shabbos residency. You try to switch as much as you can to avoid being on Shabbos when you're in Shabbos. In my residency, we also covered the ER. So it would be people coming in with sometimes even, you would see more serious stuff in the ER than you would necessarily in the dental clinic. But the obligation of all of you, if you're going to be PA, dentist, or a doctor, is to get the best training you can. So Rabbi Tenlin says that's the main thing. So if you get to go to a reputable, prestigious hospital where the training is top-notch, is 1A, that could override all the other, you know, the Shomer Shabbos programs.
Even okay. If not that much, still good, but it has Shomer Shabbos.
I'm sorry?
Let's say it's not that top, but it's still very good.
Look, if you feel that it's equal, then in Hachinami. It's a matter of,
equal,
I don't know.
Saying,
I'm saying you have, Harvard and Harlem Hospital, and you know what I mean, or something. Am I offending anybody? I'm saying, you know what I mean.
No.
I mean, we're not even dealing with apples and apples, and the training is superior. Then that may override those considerations. But if you can get an LHA, you can get the Shomer Shabbos or one of these other really good hospitals, and they offer Shomer Shabbos, and you're gonna get to where your training, where you feel you should be. So then that would be.
But you only have so much choice, right?
Correct.
I mean,
right, out of state. Out of state is very few. Right? I mean, it's. I'm sorry? I said out of state, they're very few. I mean, New York is probably more than anywhere else. Therefore, you should forgo personal comfort and convenience of training in a hospital that sympathizes with religious needs in favor of a hospital that will provide him with the best possible training. So, provided that he is certain of this fortitude in maintaining all the halachic requirements despite the less favorable environment.
Or you can go ahead.
So is it obligated to seek Therefore, he should forego first one of convenience. Okay, however, the superior training is to be acquired at the price of Shabbos, even of rabbinic ordinance only, must forego the education of man and the prestige of Shabbos. Well, he seems to write in both directions. So I will leave that to ask your local Rav at the time that you guys are ready for a match. Okay, but most people train. It's not even in many specialties, it's not an option. You know, if it's not an option, it's one thing. But I think his point is, if you could potentially get something that's equitable, well, then choose the Shomer Shabbos one or try to maintain halacha. Okay, next.
If not, you can't go in.
Right. Right. I mean, most training, you're not going to be able to have that luxury. Okay, next. We'll do brushing teeth towards the end. Somebody mentioned treating parents and chatzitza. What about having Pesach dentures, right? Or about separate sets of dentures between for milk and meat? What's the main issue about blius? Blius has to be yad seledas, right? So most people do not generally drink hot enough to be yad seledas, and if they do, they're drinking from a kli sheni. So some of the leniencies come in because of, we know, like bishul laws, right? What is it going on over there? I mean, I would certainly recommend all my Ehrlich patients and even non-Ehrlich patients to clean their dentures between meals. I've gotten dentures that the patients come out, I'm like, when was the last time you cleaned it? I want to gross anybody out here, but it's certainly something. So, it's the same thing if anybody learned Basav Chalav, I mean, your mouth should be clean. Even 6 hours later, if you should be get any meat out, it should be clean from anything. So the dentures, same din. Okay, so let's cover some halachas relatively quickly that we can go through. Masham writes that the boiling water should be poured over them before Pesach. So, this is goes back to actually in Or Chaim, Simon, 451? Tuf Nun Aleph, right? So, Simon Tuf Nun Aleph, the Shulchan Aruch says that utensils that were used as a kli sheni, maybe kashan a kli sheni. So what a denture? Denture would be a kli, and it would be used potentially as a kli sheni or a kli shlishi, depending on how you look at the iroi, right? The, whatever's going in as you're drinking. So there's some that say you should boil water and pour it over for Pesach. Many say that's not practical. I don't know if I would necessarily recommend that for the acrylic. The thing is, many of the... There's a concept of blius, right? Yes.
Retainers.
Same thing. Retainers are made from an acrylic. It's a polished acrylic. It's a powder liquid that they make it, and therefore those should probably be cleaned real well. You should try to avoid them for 24 hours before. Don't use them. Wear for one day before Pesach, and then we're going to clean them. So we're going to go through the details. But retainers, no dentures, would. I'm sorry.
No boiling water. That's
yeah, we're going to go through the details. Yes. I like it. It's fair. But people probably would drink there with their retainers. May drink a tea or coffee, but you're maybe hot cocoa. Everybody has to know that. That's fair. But a lot of guys won't. You know what? You're a mixed company and you're having a coffee. You may not take out your retainer. What about Invisalign? Right? Invisalign got some people take it out, you drink with it in. So all these new things also will come into play. Okay. So our shitas, the Dachi Tshuva, is like the most strict. Dachi Tshuva says you should have a set for meat and a set for milk. Now, Kimat, the rest of the poskim don't even say that. I had one patient in 20 years, almost 20 years, who wanted for himself a set of Pesach dentures. So we made for him a set of Pesach dentures. He owned a Sfarim store. So we traded in like Schottenstein. You know what I mean? So I'll take a few Baba Basas and some Erech. So we traded Sfarim for dental treatment. When Rav Arbach saw, so it's interesting, Shlomo Zalman was hands-on when the Sefer Nishmat Avram was written, but Shlomo Zalman Aruch Zatzal was hands-on in the writing, to the point as follows. I want to read this inside. Rav Shlomo Zalman Arbach saw the above. However, he concludes that a person who wishes to be strict with himself and either kashers them or pours boiling water over them is praiseworthy. So the quotes of Tzvi Pesach Frank, who ruled that it was sufficient to clean them with spirits, like with some alcohol. Right? Pour alcohol and clean them before Pesach. So all of the above, he wrote to me that I should write that he himself watches his dentures well, before and then causes them in water of about 7 degrees Celsius, since one does not eat or drink anything hotter than this. In order not to wait 24 hours without using the dentures before doing this, he would put a little kerosene in the water before boiling, which is Midas Chassidus, but he basically didn't want to use the dentures. He didn't want to not have to wear the dentures for 24 hours before kashering them. So he would put some kerosene, right? So no Saint Dom Lefgam. He would kind of just, you know, anything that would be there would be pugum immediately. So it's interesting. Nishmat Avraham didn't want to write Rav Shlomo Zalman by name. You know, almost like he even this was anyway, a HIPAA issue. He didn't want to say that he's wearing dentures. So he said, no, right, I, Rav Shlomo Zalman, this is what I do with my dentures. So dentures, one thing, retainers, the same thing. They should be with hot water. They should be cleaned. Probably avoid using them for 24 hours before. So we're going to cover a couple of the different halachic aspects of dental halacha. So, however, one may not visit his doctor dentist for an annual check if he feels well. This is on Chol HaMoed. Setting an appointment for Chol HaMoed. Now, I decided long ago, and this is just an Eitza, it's a nice thing, and if you could do it, it makes your yontiv that much better. I decided at the beginning when I was in my own practice that those are the vacation times. So all of yontiv, from the beginning of Sukkot to the end of Sukkot, and beginning of Pesach, end of Pesach, even the beginning of Shavuos to the end of Shavuos, but certainly the ones, no. But if all of Chol HaMoed, I close the office. Office is closed. It didn't mean I didn't go in. All right, it was closed for scheduled patients. And if somebody left a message, and I'm in the neighborhood, so I would deal with just emergencies only. It's certainly an Eitza, and it's something that, yeah, I mean, it's good for the family. It's good to be able to make Chol HaMoed part of the Chag. I mean, during the residencies and during school, it's a different story. But if you can do it when you're in practice, and that's really what we're trying to get you to get to that point, right? The rest of your life, you know, the stepping stone, it's certainly beneficial. So, a person shouldn't make an appointment for a general, of course, that's when Ben Asmanim, right? Pum Fakir, right? Guys from in from Eretz Yisrael or off from school from Landers, right? When's a good time to make a dental appointment, right? When they're off. So, typically that wouldn't be. If it's another type of procedure, it's fine, and you can even, Shlomo Zalman says, you can even charge your regular fee on Chol HaMoed for treating patients. Okay. L'rape Shinayim. So this is from Simen Ayin Ches in Ramoshe. L'rape Shinayim Chol HaMoed im yesh lo tsar af tsar katan vaday mutar. So it's certainly permissible to deal with any tzar. Now, this is it would be approached both from the chole and from the doctor. V'me'ein lo tzar v'gam'ein lachu sheyikukulu yoter. You're not worried that it's going to get messed up anymore. Ein l'rap l'chol HaMoed. One should not go ahead and have the treatment done on Chol HaMoed because it's malach ha'mamish. It's a true malach ha'mamish. It's a b'simen tof kuf lam beis. Kol revu mutar b'chol HaMoed v'gam malach gemura. So he says, look, medicine, dentistry, we have the same din. The general din is Chol HaMoed should be a time when either somebody's in a lot of pain, or if you delay, things can get worse. Right? Davar Avod. Right? That's the general concept of Malacha that's permitted, is a Davar Avod. And certainly if you wait, one can certainly look at that as a Davar Avod. Ramosha says there's no permissibility to go to the dentist on Chol HaMoed for things that can be pushed off. Another question you guys brought up was about fast days, right? So going to the dentist on a fast day goes into permission to taste food and to wash one's mouth during a fast day. This is actually Simen 567. You guys, what's it? Tough Kuf, you got it. Tough Kuf, Samach Zayin. It's proper for a person who usually rinses his mouth every morning not to do so on a public fast day. That's actually the Mechaber. So, what do we do with that? The Minchas Elazar. No, 569, not to do so. However, if he feels uncomfortable, it's permissible to be careful to bend his mouth down. This is a general idea. One could put a little water in their mouth, right? Maybe you could ask Shilas about mouthwash. You know, some that will mat your mouthwash. I would say that you could put a little mouthwash and spit it out, so you're not swallowing anything. But hold down, so you know water goes down your throat. If there is discomfort is great, this person do this on Tisha B'Av as well. But not on Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur, all bets are off. You can't put anything in your mouth. Therefore, a person who must see a dentist on a public fast day may rinse his mouth when necessary during the treatment if he is careful to bend his head forward. So you can rinse out on a public fast day, right, if you're there and going. Here was an interesting din. Mali Lugmov. You guys know what a Mali Lugmov is? Right, that's a cheekful. So when is that shayach? If one drinks a malig lugmav on Yom Kippur, he is culpable. So Shlomo Zalman had a dion. He's not going to be on the test. No reason to bring this up. Just for interesting halacha, is would a person's malig lugmav be affected by the wearing of a denture or by the fact that he's partially a denture? So he's missing some teeth. If he's missing some teeth, he could hold more. If he has a denture that fills his mouth, maybe he could hold less. So Shlomo Zalman was mesupok how to explain a Mali Lugmov in those situations. Yes?
Isn't that it's just based on most of the population?
So you're saying it would be a general rule, right? Because like a Revius, right? So Kedei Achilas Pras, we would think it is, but maybe Mali Lugmov would be more subjective than objective. Would this make the quantity larger? And if he had new dentures, would his malilum be smaller? I'm just saying the fact that Reb Shlomo Zalman has a diyun seems to me to indicate that the Mali Lugmov, as opposed to Revius, or probably a Kedei Achilas Pras, would be a more subjective measure than the other ones. But it's a good question.
No, but Mali Lugmov for Yom Kippur is on a per-person basis.
That's what we're saying.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay, next. False teeth. Do you need the kashan between meat and dairy? The kafachaim. So any svarim here can certainly be samech on the kafachaim. One need not act strictly since they are made of hard and smooth material, which like glass neither absorbs nor emits the taste of anything. I don't know, as a dentist, not as a posek, you know, but as a dentist, I wonder about that particular idea. I tend to see dentures depending how well they're polished, may not be bolea, but if they're more gritty and not super smooth, they actually can uptake some type of bleus. That being said, if they're polished properly, they tend to be relatively smooth and don't have the level. But it's an interesting idea how smooth they are. It has that it is fitting for anyone who is heaven fearing to have separate dentures for meat and milk. It's fitting that one have new dentures made specifically for Pesach, and that's actually from the Kafachaim. The Marsham also rules that one may be lenient regarding the use of some same dentures in meat and dairy, and you can be relying on certain leniencies. As long as you wash them between eating meat and dairy, even according to the Kafachaim, maybe he says Yerushimayim, right? A Yerushimayim tavolo bracha if he has separate ones, but in general. Dentures, you can rinse them off, and that's sufficient. Rav Avadya Yosef also rules he's mekel. Rav Orbach says that people probably do eat hot enough to transfer taste, and that the upper plate of the dentures, the palate of the denture, is often made partly of silver or gold. May have teeth capped with gold. Then we eat solid pieces of food. Why? What? So the main reason, so which would lead somebody to think that you can't. Psak halacha, if somebody's asking me, would be you don't need separate dentures. Tavol l'bracha if you do, but they should be washed and should be cleaned. And they should be checked to make sure that they're clean. The reason why one may act lenient is because natural heat within the mouth spoils and impairs the taste of that which is absorbed. So you have that the heat within the mouth is going to be pogam, whatever bleus was there. And that would be the main reason to be makil when it comes to a lot of the issues is the concept that the mouth will be poke many bleus between meat and milk. Yeah.
Is it
So you mentioned as a dentist that when the Kupfheim says that dentures aren't Vilea, has denture technology changed since the Kupfheim looked? He died about 80 years ago.
No, so dentures, well, they do, you would think with 3D printing you could probably, right? So there are digital dentures that are just coming out. So you can 3D print dentures. There's this company that will 3D print a try-in, right, which is a denture. It looks exactly like how the final is going to be. And then you do that, they'll 3D print that and you try it in. I haven't gotten to that type of technology yet. I'm more, a little more old school with that. Although I do mill my own crowns. So that I do with a Sarek, it's a CAD/CAM. But there's a, so there are material changes, but generally, whether it's plastic or acrylic, the materials have a similar level of porosity or lack thereof. But dentures are probably pretty similar to the when the Kupfheim is. It was still made out of acrylic back then and still now. I don't know if processed dentures are not. Certainly the last 40, 50 years are very similar to what they were, you know, which is interesting. Teeth need to be well brushed. Now we're getting to Hilchas Nida. We may go back to some of the other ideas, but somebody brought up Hilchas Nida. So the chatzitza issues are certainly right. So Roy Lebila is the sugya that we deal with, right? Ain Bila Makiv. So Bila Makiv. So do you need? Does a woman need to open her mouth in the mikvah?
No.
Correct. A woman doesn't, but she has to be able to. We have to allow water potentially to get into all the nooks and crannies. So into the every area of the mouth. So what is considered chatzitza in the mouth? So let's go through. All right, what do you guys, I'll ask for the pre-dent guys. What do you guys think could potentially be a chatzitza in the mouth?
Denture.
Okay, dentures, good. Dentures should be taken out. I agree with that.
Prosthetic.
The
implant,
prosthetics?
Implant.
So implant, now understand, general rule, anything that's built to stay in there for at least 30 days, it's not considered chatzitza. If it serves as a function in the position that it's in, not a chatzitza. Okay, so implants, fillings, white fillings, silver fillings, permanent crowns.
Invisalign?
Invisalign, out. Right? That's not even, got to take that out. That's a chatzitza, for sure. Huh? Braces are meant to stay on, so they're not a chatzitza. The issue with braces is that the woman has to be really medak deket, right, that she gets in between them. Oh, we all, probably all of us had braces, so you know how much food can get accumulated in them. Next, the elastic should be taken out. Anything that can be taken out easily by a layman should be done.
Temporaries.
That's what we want to get to. Temporary crowns. Typically, I mean, in my office, one of my offices, patient comes in with a broken tooth, they leave that day with a crown. But if they're getting a bridge, or 80% of the offices out there, so they need to wear a temporary between the time that the impression's taken until they seat the final crown or bridge or whatever it is that they're seating. So how about a temporary? Now, what do we know about Hilchos Shabbos? There's a mission that deals with the Shein Totefet, right? And there was like Keter Yushalayim. There was a woman, certain things a woman isn't allowed to wear where there's no Erev, and certain things they're not allowed to wear. What is the determining factor? Is would they be comfortable taking it out and showing it? Or would they be uncomfortable in taking it out? Typically, dentistry, most people aren't going to show off until they're finished what they have in the mouth. So let's talk about certain things. One thing people didn't bring up is sutures. The Rav Moshe has a tshuva on sutures. It happens to be his level of is a little bit more stringent than some of the other opinions. So I would say there's, I'll call it how I've heard and how I teach and I decide for my patients. If I think a woman is in the parasha, I'll tell you what I do differently. Okay? A woman that I would think is still potentially going to the mikveh, I will put in a gut suture. A gut suture will resorb on its own, okay, and it's more closely resembles to the body. Rav Moshe's psak was, if it's tucked in and you can't see the suture, that would be a place to be, then that's not considered a chatzitza. What does that imply? If it's a stitch that is more evident, then it would potentially be a chatzitza. So Rav Moshe said that there are certain situations like plastic fillings, plastic coverings. A classic would be a woman has a gum surgery. So we put this pack around the area. So if it's a situation where she could go in on a Monday morning, remove the pack, go to the mikvah Monday night, and come back Tuesday, that would be preferable in a situation like that, where it's not a super amount of discomfort. You know, hamev and yavin, it's dealt with and done. So nylon or silk or some type of material that requires removal, suture removal, would be considered a chatzitza, and therefore would be less than ideal. I learned it early on. I put in a silk suture. The woman came back, probably gave her a little more anesthetic, took that out, and put in a gut suture so that she could go to the mikvah. Permanent fillings. The only one is machmir, is the chachmas adam, it's just not practical. This is like any fillings, right, is considered a chatzitza. It's just not practical. Masham prince her to immerse herself since it's impossible for her to remove it. It's not considered a chatzitza if you can't remove it. I'm sorry? Yeah, I mean, you know, we have a fifth book of the Shulchan Aruch, and that's there for a reason. So it's a little bit of have a little seichel. Look, to each their own. What community? Where? Williamsburg? Where? Okay. Temporary filling. So let's go through the dinim. We have a little more time. Temporary fillings. So is temporary filling considered a chatzitza or not? Now we have different levels of temporary fillings. Taras Yisrael in the Mitzudas David rule that it is Nimri Yosher. Right, this is a problem involving the Beit HaStarim and a rabbinic chatzitza. Okay. However, the Shol Meshiv rules that it is not chatzitza since the cavity is now filled, due to reverse to its former state. So, right, so even with the temporary filling, it's functioning. Right, temporary filling still allows somebody to, you know, function on that area. I would like, knowing somebody's going to make, I would like to put in, there's different levels of temporary fillings. I would prefer to put in a temporary filling that I'm comfortable that in 3 months, it's still there. 4 months, it's still there. Meaning it functions as a tooth, it works as a tooth. And even if she needs to ultimately replace it, it's working the way it's supposed to. A Dachi Tshuva, right, the Munkacharav, Dachi Tshuva, quotes the Elif Lechev Shlomo, who permits a woman with a temporary filling to immerse herself in the mikveh, and this is also the rule of the Chelkat Yaakov. The Hatzvi writes that since the cavity will be permanently filled, there is no chatzitza, although the temporary filling will be replaced by a permanent one. So we have a Yeshal Milismoch, that if it's a filling that is functioning, okay, and it's even though it's temporary and ultimately going to be replaced, she can't remove it herself. The Yesh HaMi Lismoch, that is not considered a chatzitza. Dentures. Okay, if it's fixed permanently, is not. If it can be removable, it is. Removal dentures are chatzitza. Interesting. Rav Avram asked in Nishmat Adam, why isn't it similar to a glass eye? Interesting. A glass eye, a woman can be tova with a glass eye in. And yet for dentures, you have to take it out. I'm sorry? So, the Taraj Yisrael writes that, especially now, since dentures are continuously removed for cleaning, right, that's something that actually gets removed on a regular basis.
You have to start before that first, if it's a thing something wouldn't take out.
Right. It seems there's going to be some difference. And it's not something that's normally removed. Okay, so with loose tooth. It's not a chatzitza. Either the intention is the one to get it removed. As long as it's staying in and she's not removing it, that's not considered removed. Fixed orthodontic appliances, braces. There are those who are machmir by braces. But generally we're paskin if she's not taken out, it's not a chatzitza. Sutures, the dovi masharim would be the middle ground. I told you that Rav Moshe says if you can see it, a suture, then it could be an issue. It's an issue. It seems to be like buried inside the ground, the gum. Dharma Jhana says that a woman may nevertheless immerse herself even if they're visible. Best to use some type of gut suture. Okay. All right, we're getting close to the end. Let's see if there's anything here. Okay. Treating your parents. Yay or nay? Okay, let's go back a little bit. Hitting your parents, yay or nay? Okay, what's the punishment?
Misa.
Okay, so creating chabura is a big issue. Chimisa. A son may not remove a thorn from his father's flesh. I'm reading straight from the Mechaber. I'm sorry? So, less the injury in the process. Similarly, if he is a doctor, he should not draw blood from him nor amputate a limb, although he does so for medical reason. So, when would a person be permitted to work on his father? I placed an implant on my father. I worked on my mom. I've done a number of things that certainly have led to chaburas and bleeding. So, there's a couple of things. Number one is, if he permits you, that actually is a place where that could be a leniency, according to some poskim. Minchas Chinuch writes that when the Torah said that a son who hits a parent deserves punishment, it's only if he does it with the parent's permission. So the Minchas Chinuch is a makel. Minchas Chinuch says that if a parent gives you permission, there would be the leniency, the kula to work on your parent. Geshar Chaim also permits the son to give his mother injections, who is being forgiven to get injections, for example, when someone else is available, goes beyond the halakhic requirement. But the Geshar Chaim expresses knowledge that since the son will do this without payment, while another will take money, it is as if there is no one else available. There, the poets can generally say, if there's no one else, then a child can treat their parent, his or her parent. So, number one, they have to minchas chinuch. Minchas chinuch is good minekel, because a parent gives you permission. Number two, we have, if you have nobody else there, then b'makom she'nish. Right, so you have to step up and do that. If the parents want you to do it, and you're not charging them, right? So then that would be another rationale to treat treat the parents. However, the Har Tzvi writes that although the son is permitted to draw blood, unless he should try and find someone else to do it, he thus avoids inadvertently doing an act, injuring, fine. That felt next. I saw from Rav Heineman in Baltimore, he basked in the same way. They can have this. I'm a dentist, and my father needs to cover this halacha. I'm a dentist, and my father needs extensive dental work. If I do the work myself, then it would save him a substantial amount of money. But the procedure will make him bleed. I'm allowed to do this. Straight up, a question that was asked. So we don't need to go through that it's make avivimo mosimas. That's pretty straightforward. That doesn't need a lot of explanation. If the child's doctor, when he treated his parent, one should not cause bleeding. The question arises, what is the halacha in a situation where there are others present? The chida rules stringently, and this also brings, the minchas chinuch, who is mekel. So you have chida on one side, and the minchas chinuch on the other. The Reb Herzog argued in favor of ruling like the minchas chinuch to allow it. The Tzvi Pesach Frank was hesitant to be lenient, and one should not allow this. Shlomo Zalman wrote that in a situation that there are other possible reasons to rule leniently, one can certainly add to them the opinion of Minchas Chinuch and allow a child. Where would be the reasons? Saving money, potentially, right? And nobody else. And he would prefer that his son treat him. So, according to Minchas Chinuch, if a parent gives a child permission to carry out the above noted service, the child may do so even though it will cause the parent to bleed. Among recent posts in Reb Reish in the Chuvos Chelkas Yaakov, seems to be that one can be lenient. There's also an opinion of Rav Heineman, who rules that one may permit a child to perform dental work on his or her parent. The parent gives consent due to financial considerations, and the child wants to comply. So what we have is, we certainly have shittos on one side to say, be machmir. And if your parent is more comfortable going to somebody else, don't push him to come to you. Whether it's for medical treatment or for dental treatment, let him go to another doctor. If you're the best in your field, or your parents are the most comfortable with you, or you're going to save a lot of money, yesh ami lismoch to treat your parents. Okay. I want to end, let's see, what time is it? 9:45. Okay. Very important idea. It certainly would be good for a conclusion. Then we'll go to, you know, the Rosh Hashiva here, you know, Rabbi Leibowitz. So, Rabbi Neuwirth, he says, wrote to me that those assisting a doctor dentist may not do so if they know he carries out unnecessary treatments to his, on his patients in order to charge a larger fee. If necessary, they must leave the position. Right? Ani Hashem Elokeichem, right? Ultimately, you know who's the judge. We need to, whether you're working, become an associate, work in a practice, you need to work with people that are Elokh and people that are going to be Shomer Mitzvahs and are going to be not cheat people and practice in a particular way. A work ethic like that, you need to, everybody here needs to develop. It starts here and starts through medical school and dental school. But you need to develop a work ethic that you're not looking for shortcuts, and you're looking to treat everybody as well as you can and try to avoid. And Chil Hashem, and try and avoid. Chil Hashem could be Medicaid fraud. Unfortunately, you see Medicare fraud, Medicaid fraud, right? And if one of the doctors happens to be a Yid, it certainly doesn't bode well for the tribe. Okay. Brushing your teeth, yay or nay?
Yay.
Good, I like that you brush your teeth. That's important. What about on Shabbos? Okay. So, Rabbi Leibowitz gives an exhaustive discussion about brushing your teeth. And let's just go through for just a couple minutes some of the issues. Mimareach, smearing. Okay, you could be changing the toothpaste from some type of solid, like form gel, to a liquid. So that might potentially be. So, the stringent view, like Rav Moshe, spreading dense, semi-solid toothpaste over the surface of the teeth violates the rabbinic prohibition of Mimareach. Although squeezing the tube may not be an issue. I always grew up, squeezing the tube was the issue, right? Squeezing out the tube could be the issue. But, so, lenient view is Ravad Yosef. It's not a problem with Mimareach. Merely for the toothpaste to aid in removing unwanted plaque or other food substances from the teeth, after which both the toothpaste, plaque and food substances are washed away. So that's a Ravad Yosef on one side, or Moshe Feinstein on the other, concerning Mimareach, right, or smearing. Smoothing soft, pliable substances. So that's one issue. Rav Soloveitchik says that Mimareach is only when newly smooth layers remains on the surface. Since the toothpaste is washed away, Rav Soloveitchik was also mekil when it comes to the issue of Mimareach. What about molid? Creating something. Now, molid generally is considered only Rabbanon. The Rabbanon of creating. Right, it resembles a malacha. So, the stringent view, including Rav Yitzchak, would be do not allow the use of toothpaste showers and grass of molad because it changes its consistency. Lenient view, again, is... I'm sorry? No, from like a gel. One is you're smearing something onto the teeth. The other thing is as you brush, that's mimareach. Then molad would be you're changing it from a gel to a liquid. So you have both issues. You're smearing on the teeth. Something, so it's smearing, like anointing yourself. On top of that, it's changing status from, right? Anybody spit out, unless you don't brush at all, what you spit out is not what you started with, right? You started with the saliva kind of mixes out and liquefies it. Ravad Yosef and Herschel Schechter, no related to the change from a squishy paste-like substance to a foam is anything compared to molid. Refuah, right? What about refuah? Is brushing your teeth going to be refuah? Now, we know... The halacha is drinking a tea, eating chicken soup, right? Is that considered refuah? Why not? Because it's something that a healthy person does also. So if it's a maisubari, right? A healthy person would do it. So then it's not considered refuah. That would be the way we look at it. So brushing your teeth. Exactly. Lenient view, the overwhelming majority posting, which discusses brushing your teeth, says that it's not refuah at all. Renotheri is not concluding the ban on taking medicine. What about desensitizing? Israelite toothbrush, schita. So generally schita would be, this is the next issue, would be something right from the, something would come out of the brush. Now bristles are non-porous, they don't absorb. Generally the nylon bristles don't absorb, but what about from inside between the bristles? Squeezing a liquid out of solid is considered schita. So, stringent view, nylon bristles of toothbrush are made from a non-absorbent material and therefore not subject to the biblical prohibition. But Moshe Feinstein rules that one should not use a wet toothbrush since the bristles of the toothbrush are densely packed and therefore liquid will come out. The linear view. Yeah.
I'm sorry, I just don't understand the molar thing, because anything you eat on Shabbos gets liquid out of saliva. So why is it different by toothpaste?
If
you eat it all, obviously it's extreme, but I mean, I know it conflicts with everything that's got in Shabbos.
So let's see. Squeezing ice so that water flows is prohibited, just as squeezing juice from olives and grapes. One major practical difference between the two explanations would be the principle of changing a liquid into a solid. Clearly bearing no resemblance to shechita, it should certainly be considered an equally creative act.
Like an ice cube.
Exactly, ice cube. Holding an ice cube in your hand.
Right.
Would be an issue of mola. So, you're right, but I'm saying, ein breira, when it comes to food, I agree. I like where you're thinking, but when it comes to food, ein breira, what are you going to do? You know, you got to get food in your mouth.
Right, of course. But
right. So then it resembles. So it's resembling something. I ain't a chinami. That's why a majority would probably say that's not the issue. Although many people, so, I mean, I always grew up to be somech on, so the other one is chabura. Okay? And that's a real issue. And then the other one is uvda dechol. So I'm just going to cover, maybe I'll scan this and send it out. It's worthwhile seeing it. But the idea is that you have a couple of things to think about. It's chabura, right? If you have really bad gums, so you have to worry about your gums, you're going to bleed. That's the main reason why I don't recommend anybody flossing over Shabbos, because most people can't floss without bleeding. Okay? So that's what that. Chabura. What about uvda dechol? It's a weekday activity. There's a precedent for such a ruling. Linear view also do not raise the issue of duchol in relation to brushing teeth, though, since the issue is never addressed by these poskim. They're not defined as any action that resembles an action that's normally done exclusively on weekdays. So we have quite a few different.
But if you're aware,
sorry?
Brush teeth on.
Cleaning off your toothbrush.
I'm sorry?
Can you clean off your toothbrush?
Ah, so that's hachana. Rabbi Leibowitz also deals with hachana. So we don't really. So Rabbi Lewis goes into it. He says we don't really wash our toothbrush off. You can't make a bed on Shabbos. You can make it Shabbos morning if you plan on going like back into it. But if you're just doing it so it's ready for like you're sleeping, you can't. That's a chana. So we don't wash our toothbrush off, most of us, because we're preparing it for the next day. We wash it off because if people left it there, we think it's disgusting. Okay? So what's the best way to go? There are many, right, in Israel they sell that liquid toothpaste, that disgusting liquid toothpaste. So, as a dentist, the way I recommend it is, if you can, use a dry toothbrush. Okay, once it gets wet in your mouth, it's a different story, but a dry, so don't rinse it.
Like Colgate is like a little bit more like...
So, I would say liquidy. I happen not to brush with toothpaste on Shabbos, because of enough reasons for the mola and the merech. So, you can do it Erev Shabbos, and you do it Masi Shabbos, you're fine. I use a clean, dry toothbrush, and that's sufficient. Okay, we got, what time is it? All right, we got 2 minutes. This is covered as a review. We covered a lot of halachos. The things that are in there are, basically, we dealt with the different aspects of reasons why autopsies are prohibited. Okay, we talked about hanofram ameis, kavod ameis, bizayon, delaying in the burial. We talked about times when it would be permitted, if it's a pikuach nefesh, generally, or potentially of saving somebody else. That may even be for a mother who lost a child. We said that generally these laws apply to a Jew, not a Gentile. That's why one can observe autopsies of a Gentile. We talked about Kohanim and how the Ramosha's doesn't recommend it for going to go into refuah. But there are ways, if he can avoid touching the body because of the concept of Tumas Ol, versus Tumas Mada. So those were the things we talked about at the autopsy. We dealt with Pikuach Nefesh, Hilchos Shabbos, whether it's Sakana, Pikuach Nefesh, right? Chol HaSheyesh Bo Sakana would be an abscess, Chol HaSheyein Bo Sakana, Tzar Gadol, which would be most other dental toothaches, and how to deal with that. Maybe try to avoid Derabbanan, bring in a Gentile, non-Jewish dentist, and finding ways to deal with that competently. We dealt with chatzitza issues, permanent or functioning versus things that are not functioning, removable or not removable, silk versus gut. We dealt with your parents, and those are issues of parents, which is making chabura with your parents, Make avivimo mosimas, and how if there would be the minchas chinuch would provide the leniencies, saving money, permission from your parents, and there are ways yesham ilismach. Adkan. Sure. Which offer is easier for you?
Probably here.
Here? Okay, so I'll give you both. 718. 5-2.